What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Hot Shot Wake Up. This is your weekly wildfire update. Things have started to slow down, but I hope everybody is doing fine and taking that time to kind of relax and recover from the wildfire season. For folks who aren't wildland firefighters, hopefully you're seeing some of those firefighters that you haven't been able to spend time with over the last few months. Like I said, things have slowed down, at least on an operational level. There's still some fires that are doing suppression repair, and there's work to be done on the Pacific Northwest a little bit, but not a whole lot. California's popping a couple smaller fires, one a day-ish, at least ones that are showing up and have any sort of media attention. But again, very small, and California's, at least Northern California's fire season's over. I think it's safe to make that call. But one of the big lingering questions that I think everybody was hoping to have answered before the season ended, and you went about your day-to-day, and you were trying to make plans for what you're going to do in the off-season, or at least while you're back to your 40 hours a week in the office, I think a lot of folks were just hoping to have all of this pay legislation figured out before we got to this point. So I'm going to briefly just talk about that, and then we'll cover all sorts of other stuff. There's a great lessons learned that came out. It came out a while ago, but then they put out this long facilitated learning analysis on an entrapment that happened in the Dakotas and burned over some equipment. People were in a really tight spot after they did some firing operations. And I think a lot of folks have found themselves in those situations. So, or at least situations that could lead to that. So I'm going to talk about that. Some more people came out and gave their opinions, educators, people in the technology industry, gave their thoughts on that Wildfire Commission's report that came out that we covered on the Substack last week. Again, if you want to support this show, everything that I do is supported through that Substack. It's thehotshotwakeup.substack.com, and you can click and subscribe there, and that supports everything that I do. We covered this commission report there. It's a massive report, plain and simple. And a lot in there, but a lot to do with technology and switching from more of a suppression mode into a proactive mode. And, you know, there's some new stuff in there. There's a lot of stuff that's not new. If you, again, I harp on it all the time, but the UN report that came out on wildfire, there's a lot of the recommendations in that, in this commission report as well. But there's this big push for technology, and folks have thoughts on that, and I'll cover that later in the show as well. But on this pay legislation, as anything with government, there's a lot going on around it. And I'm sure a lot of folks have realized that another war has broken out, not only in Europe now, but in the Middle East, there's a war again. We still don't have a Speaker of the House in the House of Representatives, and not a lot of stuff is getting done until that's finished. And then they'll move back to legislating, I guess. But then before they can just start hammering stuff through, there's the looming shutdown again. And that shutdown is supposed to take place early November, so just a couple weeks out. As I said on the last one, the last shutdown that happened, I expected them to figure something out in the 11th hour. And they did do that, but now we've pushed it back to November. And we'll see. We'll see what happens. These bills are still lingering, and we're waiting to see if these things are going to pass. Even before this new war broke out in the Middle East, I was sarcastically but seriously saying that the best bet for these Wildland Firefighter Paycheck Protection Act and these other ones that will basically save the wages of wildland firefighters around the nation from going down a tremendous amount and taking a large pay cut going into the holiday season is attaching them to war legislation. And that's before this other war broke out. And now we have two wars, so my guess would be they just attach all of this stuff to war legislation. And everything will get slammed through, and we'll move on from there. If that doesn't happen, then it's a whole new ballgame, and we'll see what happens. But I would be shocked if they put forth all of these appropriations and billions of dollars to kind of just, yeah, it's just wartime now is what it is. So you attach it to that, and I'd be surprised if they didn't. And that's how you spend, and that quite literally, you know, we're almost $34 trillion in debt, so that's how that happens over time. And we'll see if you can ever get an independent bill on wildland firefighting, pay and wages, so on and so forth. But I'll say it now, like, I'm kind of a gambling kind of guy. But if someone had a gun to my head and they said, you have to pick one or the other, what's going to happen coming up in November? My answer would be they slam stuff through, everything gets attached to war funding, and they narrowly escape having the government shut down. But who knows? Who knows? But I know a lot of folks, and I agree with them. Like, they, of course you want to know what's going to happen before you shut down for the year and transition over into the more project burning and office time and the off season. Like, that's always the question. That's the classic question in wildland firefighting is, are you going back next year? What are you going to do next year? Are you going back? Are you going back? And I always remember it was pretty easy to make that determination unless something came up right at the end of the year. Like, something happened in October, or there was some uncertainty with overhead, or am I going to get the job I wanted? I don't know. Should I go somewhere else? But usually it was like, yeah, I told them I'm coming back. I'll probably come back. Yeah. But when you have something like this lingering over your head and you don't know what you're going to get paid next year and they might pay you less next year, yeah, it just makes that decision so much harder, and you don't need that added stress going into these days off. And we talked a lot about that on the Substack as well, both with Danny and Destiny discussing that transitional period and what that's like, and the stress that's already there with the friends and family and the other things that happen when wildland firefighters leave the forest and start reintegrating back into society. But that's what's going on there. There's still a lot to figure out in DC. And if they can get their shit together, you know, pardon my French, but if they can, what that'll mean is firefighters will probably be able to pass the Paycheck Protection Act and a bunch of other money going other places, so on and so forth. I still stand on my soapbox when I say there's just priority issues because there's money going everywhere except for here. And I know there's other people in other industries who probably think the same thing, and like, they spend money on everything, but they don't spend money on our industry. I get that. Like, I can understand that. But it seems like, at least in my entire lifetime, there's never been a situation where the government has been afraid to spend money, except for when it comes to like first responders and taking care of troops and, you know, like the important stuff you would think they would do. So, yeah, I don't know. It'll be fun. It's just the same show. It's like you click on, you know, the TV that is reality, and it's just the same show over and over again. You got different characters. Sometimes there's a different script, but lately the script has been pretty straightforward and like, oh, I've seen this before. Oh, I recognize this. Oh, we're doing this again. Oh, didn't I already watch this one? Is this a rerun? You know, like, what the hell? Anyway, so we should probably move on from that. Sorry, kind of an early morning rant with coffee here. Things have slowed down operationally around the United States, at least with suppression of fire. Prescribed fire has picked up right in its place. It's nice to see. Colorado has been killing it. Utah has been crushing it. Montana has gotten some burns done. I know Idaho has done some burns. Parts of California have actually been chunking some burns as well, which is nice to see. But it's looking like Colorado's putting some acres on the ground. They're having 10,000 acre burns, or at least planned, that have started. And they're just crushing out acres. So a lot of forests, a lot of districts have transitioned into that mode. We have dropped nationally to a preparedness level 1. That basically tells you that the fire season is over at this point in time. For folks out there who are grasping at straws and hoping that California pops off, you know, late Southern California season, I'll even cross my fingers with you just to like try to keep hope alive for you. But at a PL1 nationally and only 47 fires across the entire nation, you know, that's what we're looking at. They are saying there was two new large incidents. Two large fires were contained, and there are currently 12 uncontained large fires. Almost all the teams are back at home that have been managing these things. There's a Type 2 team out, and they have one of these complex IMTs roving around as well. On the Substack, I wrote an article talking about how it has been the slowest fire season in 25 years, in a quarter century, at least year to date, and this was about a week ago, slowest in 25 years. And we covered that, and we also talked about how Canada has had this tremendous year, and most of the article was discussing historical events that mimicked or looked like this, mostly being the El Nino, La Nina switch, which we covered extensively in that Substack article, and relating it back to the 1997-98 El Nino and the 92-93 era, more that 93 era of El Nino pushing through, and how those were record slow fire years as well, record low cost of fire years. But there wasn't a big difference in number of starts, which I thought was fascinating. Basically, these things just weren't getting big because we had all this moisture pushed through with these El Nino systems. But on those years as well, Canada had massive fire seasons. In the 97 era of these El Ninos, it was more on that Quebec, Ontario side of the country, and not so much in British Columbia and Alberta, Northwest Territories, even though they did have fires during those years. But it was just an interesting parallel, and it was something like 38% of your normal acres burned is what happened this year. And that math was done with the year-to-date numbers provided by NFSI. And I give you an update on those, but they are having a problem, it says, at least on their website. It's been saying that they have a problem now calculating or I guess, how did they word it? Populating, I guess, would be a good word. They had a hard time populating those numbers the last week or so. Someone sent me a message saying it was a grand conspiracy because I wrote an article on it, but it's like, give me a break. No, they got some sort of glitch going on. But if you look across the United States, the last fire that was most notable, even in the last couple weeks, has been this Anvil fire out in Oregon on the Rogue River Siskiyou. It's 80% contained. It's 22,000 acres. It cost $53 million. And it's done. I am saying that, not the fire. The fire, for folks who are new listeners or aren't wildland firefighters, if you have a fire that's 80% contained, it's done. A lot of folks would argue if you have a fire that's 62% contained, you would consider it done, especially depending on like the fuels and where you're at. But a lot of time these numbers are downplayed. And I get why. There's that safety error or that error, that room for error on safety when you put out numbers like that. Really, this update, we're just going to be talking about all that money they're spending. On the flat fire in Oregon, again, that fire's done. It cost $72 million. The Camp Creek fire, if you remember this, up in Mount Hood, that cost $23 million. And that's what's going on up in the Pacific Northwest. Not a whole lot of other things happening. Northern California, they're at a PL2, but still, they had five new fires. Smith River Complex, which we've been talking about for over a month now, $142 million for that complex. So we're getting close to $250 million on that one fire. And it's a big fire, don't get me wrong, 94,000 acres. A lot of fire went on the ground, a lot of work was put in, but a very, very expensive fire. On the Six Rivers, you also have the Lightning Complex. That's cost $75 million, and the Happy Camp Complex on the Klamath National Forest costing $110 million. So three fires in Northern California are pushing $350 million. At least when it's all said and over, we'll be reaching those numbers or higher. To put that into some sort of perspective, what the Forest Service and the Bureau of Land Management were asking to extend firefighters' current pay through January 1st of 2024, these three fires are about three times what those agencies were asking to keep wages going. I just got to keep going back to that and add perspective to how little, in the grand scheme of things, how little these agencies are asking. And, you know, you have these legislators who, at right now, they can't figure anything out. Congress is a mess. And I'm sorry to come back to this, but it's like, it's just, I mean, I can't be the only one seeing this, right? Anyway, those fires, by the end of it, you might even be pushing a half a billy by the time these three fires get wrapped up. Or I should say three complexes. If you toss in the South Fork complex, also in California, that's another $42 million. So you're basically already at $400 million for these four complexes. But they got to spend budgets, right? Because if you don't spend the budget, you lose the budget. So you got to spend it. The southern area, not a whole lot going on. I know Mississippi has had some fires. They have been busy, but compared to, you know, if you just compare it to some of these fires out west, you would say that these fires aren't very big. But Mississippi is having a couple thousand acre fires, seemingly more starts than usual. If you were to look at the national average compared to Mississippi, you know, they look busy. And nothing that's catching a lot of attention, but definitely, you know, keeping folks on their toes down there. The Southwest, couple fires kicking around. A couple of them are being managed. But you have the Still Fire on the Coconino. That's getting close to 11,500 acres. It grew by 2,000 acres yesterday. But again, 67% contained. I wouldn't be shocked if, you know, they're throwing fire on the ground and corralling these things in. And then the Valentine Fire on the Tonto, that's pushing 10,000 acres. They are doing proactive burning on that. A lot of prep went in, and they're just getting acres on the ground and good acres on the ground. Michigan had a fire out in the eastern area. It's the Yellow Dog Fire. Nothing big, but it's 144 acres, and there's just a dry spell and a warm spell for a while up in those Great Lakes states, and they were in the middle of the fall colors, and you had some dry leaves on the ground, and these things, you know, these things can pop off. Lastly is Southern California. A couple smaller fires, but nothing really of note. And if there was going to be, you know, a 1,000-acre fire plus that pushes off in the next couple weeks, that's kind of where that would be. As I covered in an article just a couple days ago on the Substack, Argentina had a large fire push through a section of their country. Kind of caught folks off guard, burned up a bunch of houses, and basically it was wall-to-wall brush fire with strong winds that pushed into this town of about 80,000 people, so I guess I would call that a city. And if you want to see footage of that and read about details of that, you just go to the hotshotwakeup.substack.com. And you can take a look there. But we're transitioning into that Australia, Southern Hemisphere, South America fire season. And usually if they have a busy one, it's you know, there's a lot of action happening. Last year, we covered everything that happened down in Chile, Bolivia, Argentina, and those South American states down there. And we'll have to see if Australia has a large fire season as we move into this new time of year, and with the El Nino and La Nina switch. So definitely something to stay tuned in for. Chile got crazy last year. Like, military got involved. There were local terrorist groups, and it's kind of like what's happening over in the Middle East, in which I say it's a lot of he said, she said, and, you know, everyone's picking a side. That's kind of what was happening in Chile with their wildfire season, because you had these local groups where they were considered freedom fighters and things like that from a certain sector of the population. And then the other sector of the population thought they were terrorists, and then the military gets involved. And yeah, all I'm saying is Chile was wild last year. If you want to stay up on that, or if you want to support the show, the updates, everything that I do, the giveaways, the GoFundMes for wildland firefighters who get injured on the job and help with their family, just go to the hotshotwakeup.substack.com. Click on that subscribe button. Right now, it's cheaper than a gallon of gas in California. So If you want to support and help keep this going, as I've said before, it's a one-man show. It's just me doing all of this, editing, recording, getting the updates, writing the articles, everything. It's a lot, and I'm going to try to keep it going, so I appreciate it if you would help out if you find yourself coming back repeatedly and listening to the shows and going to the sites to check for updates and reading the articles. One last time, thehotshotwakeup.substack.com. Click on that subscribe button, and again, supports everything that I do.
I have traveled this year over all the United States, through the Alleghenies, the White Mountains, and the Catskills, the Rockies and the Bitterroot Mountains, the Cascades, the Coast Range, and the Sierras.
So two things I'm going to cover on this segment. First, just real quick, there's a Forbes article that came out talking about how the United States is going to move forward with this Wildfire Commission's recommendations, what's in it, what it means to certain people. And I highlight it because of how it draws parallels to what I've been saying for 2 years now, which is it's a technology push. They're pushing for technology. They're getting away from suppression. They're transferring budgets and funding over to proactive programs, satellites, drones, AI, and that they're looking to build a new workforce out from that. I think that's very important information. When I first started talking about it 2 years ago, there was a lot of pushback and just annoying people on the internet and things like that. But there was quite a bit of it. Of people saying, man, like, what are you talking about? That's not what's going on. But as time has passed, more and more people have been like, wow, okay, yeah, this kind of seems like the way they're going. It's speeding up. It's starting to snowball faster and faster. And there's pros and cons like everything else. This isn't cut and dry a bad or a good thing. It's like, it's got to shake out. And we'll see where it goes. But point being, it's clear now that this is the direction that they're going. So this Forbes article by Jamie Hailstone, which is a fantastic name for someone who writes on earth and climate for Forbes. Again, Jamie Hailstone. It makes me wonder, is that just like a pen name? Anyway. It's a decent article, and it starts like this. The 2023 wildfire season has certainly proved to be a memorable one, raising all manner of questions from how to respond to the health impacts in smoke and heat and how we can improve forestry management. Now, when I read this article, I stopped after that first paragraph, and I thought to myself, memorable to who? You know? Or is it whom? The East Coast folks is where this narrative is coming from. And it's a true narrative because it was smoky and it was hot out east. But I always pick up on that because I've spent so much time out west fighting wildfire that when the East Coast does get hit by this stuff, and again, I talked about how this happened back in 97, 98, the East Coast got blasted with Canadian wildfire smoke. And I said no one made a big deal out of it because there wasn't social media or telephones or cell phones where people could just text each other and post on the internet how smoky it was. But it happened. But it's a roundabout way of saying on years where the East Coast doesn't get that, a lot of these large media companies, they don't have articles like this because they didn't experience that wildfire smoke and people out west are like, it's burning down out here and no one cares. But you get a little bit of smoke across New York City and Boston and, you know, there's some attention that gets drawn to it. Now, it dives right into the commission report and says, the recent report by the Wildland Fire Mitigation Management Commission outlined a number of recommendations. There's a lot of them. These include putting greater emphasis on proactive measures, greater collaboration between the different agencies involved, and an expanded year-round workforce. Something that I've been talking about for quite some time now. In a statement, Secretary of the Interior Deb Haaland said under the leadership of President Biden, the report will chart up, quote, new path forward for the nation on wildland fire mitigation and management. Now, this is why I've been hammering this for 2 years, is because this is what was just said by the secretary. It is their new path forward. There's going to be some seismic changes happening in the industry in the next couple years that, unless you're keeping up on this, a lot of folks are going to be caught off guard saying, why did we go this direction? What's happening? Where did my funding go? Who are all of these new people here now? And another point I'm going to make later in this article is they call for this new workforce and training new people and bringing new people in, when for the last 3 years, it's almost like they've tried to detonate current retention and recruitment in the traditional suppression industry of wildfire and that side of things, crews and engines, smoke jumpers, all of that sort of thing. And there's a fair amount of folks who have said, hey, we think that this is, you know, not vindictive, but it seems like they're trying to clear the place out. And it seems like they're trying to get people to leave. And so when I have those sorts of emails and things coming in from people with positions and email addresses where you're like, oh, okay, dang. You start thinking to yourself, you know, it starts to creep in the back of your mind like, oh man, maybe they're trying to clean house. You hate to think that way, but, you know, as the article continues and says, previous recommendations were very suppression focused, said Allison Wolf, who is the chief executive and co-founder of land resilience data platform, Vibrant Planet. So she is an AI data-based company, it sounds like. But now we've hit a, quote, interesting turning point in how we deal with wildfires. She added that the, quote, big headline was the report's recommendation around shifting from reactive to proactive. And she said science-driven technology will play a key role in developing effective solutions. We have to move faster than ever before to keep ecosystems intact, said Wolf. Now, this is where we get into the part of the article where I'm like, okay, this is being sensationalized a little bit. You're adding a little bit more urgency than I think there is. I'm not saying, you know, forest management shouldn't be urgent, you know, like, so if you're a new listener and you don't understand or have heard my opinions on this, it's like, yes, of course you need to manage your forest and we do need it to do it more, but where's the money going is my question. Like, where's the money going to go? It continues saying, quote, there are places in California where forests will convert to shrub and grasslands in the next 10 or 20 years. If we don't intervene, okay, that's one thing I also like to point out is it's always about human intervention. And that's why I harp so much on weather modification and cloud seeding, which they're hammering right now in California and other places. Is it's always human intervention, and it's always an emergency, so on and so forth. And that's when all this money gets thrown around, and there's not a lot of accountability, and you start asking questions like, hey, where did that $22 billion go? By the way, our firefighters need $70 million, and we're told they can't get it. That's the way my brain works when I read these articles. It just rips through these things. It says, technology can enable speed and scale while improving scientific information. I agree with all of that if these platforms work. That could very well happen. It continues saying, we can't have 10-year planning processes that end in litigation, she told me. Love that thought. I've been talking about that on the Substack for a while now, is none of these projects get done because they constantly are getting sued. Over and over again, you're just always getting sued by people. She also says, our only hope is to use technology to understand what we're dealing with at any given time. So they want, from that statement, that says to me they want around-the-clock 24-hour surveillance of these forests and constantly analyzing and grabbing data. When I talked to Jason Forthover of the Missoula Fire Lab, that's something we talked about, is a lot of these companies coming in, they see the dollar signs, and I'm not saying this is what Jason said. It's just I brought this conversation up when we were talking about it, and he said that this sort of thing, when it comes to data, they love data because that's what your systems need to improve and get bigger. And how do you get more data? Well, you have more surveillance, you have more satellites, you have more drones up, you have more everything. You just have more pipelines feeding these data systems. And then the money goes into these data systems. And then who manages the data systems? Who owns the data systems? It's just, these are the things that never get answered in articles like this. Allison Wolf continued saying, research shows that there are 240 million acres in the United States that are at risk of high severity fire and 1,800 communities within those acres that could potentially be affected. Okay, yep, wildland urban interface, a lot of folks in there. She added the combination of healthy forest structures that were disrupted when 93% of the trees in the West were cut down to build railroads, mines, towns, and other things 150 years ago. Basically, the entire United States, even the Great Lakes, Minnesota, Wisconsin, everything was cut down. She says, quote, forests are literally exploding on us, and the only thing we can do is get people out of the way once a fire becomes a mega fire. We can't suppress our way out of this. And that's what the UN report said as well. It's a true statement, but that is the statement they've been using to justify the direction that they're going, which is a heavily, heavily technology-based path forward with, you know, talk of a new workforce and a changing workforce, so on and so forth. It continues on saying, quote, we have to get thousands of workers rallied, mobilize them really quickly, and train foresters and scientists to get out there and do this work. We have to do this hard work or we're going to lose everything. So, I'm not trying to be an asshole. I'm not trying to be an asshole here, but so they just want data collection, right? They're saying we have to collect data and analyze our forests and have it constantly surveyed or we're going to lose these things in 10 years. All of our forests are going to be dead in 10 to 20 years, which I don't believe those numbers. I think that's a wild mischaracterization of the problem we have. But I'm not saying we don't have a problem, because we do. But 10 years, everything's going to be wrecked? No, I don't think it's quite that. Heads up, it's the slowest fire season in 25 years. Just throwing that out there. But all of that said, once you collect all of this stuff and you have all of this data, yeah, it'll take a lot of foresters and scientists to collect this stuff, but who's going to do the labor work? That's the question I have, because you've stripped your labor side of things already. So who's going to do that work? You have to remove these fuels. Are they planning on having it all being mechanized? What is their plan here? Once you have all of this stuff calculated and the satellites in the sky, because a lot of the money's going towards that. Or is this their way of saying, hey, we'll have the government do all the data and then we'll have private sector do all the labor? Is that where we're going with this? And I think that's a valid question to ask. And, you know, are folks out there comfortable with that exchange? The government's in control of all of the science and data, and then all of the labor is done by labor and private sector labor, which if you look at what happened in the Pacific Northwest, and again, I'm not hating on you guys out there. I'm just saying this happened. They had some issues with those folks and who they were having do the labor, how they were not paying these people appropriately. And the government came in and did an audit, and they're like, there's some pretty big red flags going on out here. Is that who's going to be doing all this work? That's the question. And if the answer is yes, start a contract crew. You know, like if that's the answer. But you got to ask yourself these things. It continues saying, the president and chief executive of the U.S. Endowment for Forestry and Communities, named Pete Madden, said in an email that the commission report was timely and comprehensive, and it was very comprehensive. Again, covered this on the Substack, thehotshotwakeup.substack.com earlier this week. We commend their recommendations for proactive, collaborative approaches that engage nonprofit organizations, the forest industry, and healthcare community. And it goes on to say that he, you know, likes to see the changes that are coming and wants to make it be known that the changes are coming and it's the right direction. I just wanted to cover that because it's a lot of what I've been talking about over the last couple years finally coming to fruition in a report by this commission and them saying, hey, this is the direction we're going to go. This is the way we're going to go with it, so on and so forth. I wanted to cover this entrapment lessons learned, but man, it was going to take like 40 minutes and now we're pushing. That would put us at like a 2-hour podcast. So maybe I'll transfer that one over to another podcast. But there are two other injuries I wanted to highlight before we go. Nothing major. One could have been really bad, it looks like. And it's just kind of that thing where, hey, we're transitioning out of the wildfire season into those shoulder seasons where you do prescribed firework and some project work, and those injuries can still happen. And this was down in Arizona. There was a hotshot hit by a tree while doing prescribed burning down there. It says on the Tonto National Forest, which is down in Arizona, a Forest Service employee on an R5 hotshot crew was struck on top of the helmet with an approximately 8-inch diameter branch while swamping during chainsaw operations. That's a big branch coming down on top of you. Forest Service EMTs assessed the crew member, and they were transported to the hospital by agency vehicle. X-rays were taken, and the crew member was released with no restrictions. So it sounds like maybe a precautionary, and they just really wanted to make sure there wasn't any problems. After you get struck by something like that, you're going to get shaken up. Maybe there's some sort of stress fracture or your spine got jacked up a little bit. There was another one that was up on Lessons Learned the other day of a tree that came down on a side-by-side or a UTV vehicle and crushed the top of that. So again, even though it's not running and gunning, trees still come down. And there's still fire-weakened trees out there when you're doing RX, even though, you know, you've walked around and you've done your due diligence to see if there's anything that needs to be checked up on. But just a point of staying heads up out there. For the folks out there that are going through that transition and, you know, it's not quite ski season yet, but fire season's over, or you're back in the office, or you're back at home, you're making plans to travel around and catch up with people. I know as well as you do, it's pretty easy to get socially overwhelmed when those sorts of things happened, and then you have a couple drinks and you go home and you wake up the next morning and you're not feeling that great about yourself because you don't have some mission or mountain to crush up. So just try to stay active, try to have goals, try to keep exercising. That's a big one. It's cold and rainy where I am right now, but I'm still going to strap up and try to run through the woods on some trails a little bit later here just to get that heart moving, get that oxygen flowing to the brain, and try to not, you know, there's been some people who've been reaching out and they're like, hey, it's World War III. You know, what the hell, man? This is all, you know, what's going on? Yeah, you know, that is happening, but you got to take care of your own and focus on what you can control. That's the big one. Check up on the news and see what's going on, of course, and plan accordingly for, you know, things that you think are going to happen or could happen. But also realize that, you know, focus on what you can control. And if you can master that realm, then and you'll feel a whole lot better just about the day-to-day and what's going on and through this transition period. So just wanted to get those thoughts out. As always, check in on your homies, see how they're doing. If you haven't talked to them in a while, get outside, exercise, stretch, get that fresh air, eat those quality calories because those are the ones that count. Hydrate, get the rest you need because that's needed for that recovery. But when you get up, you got to get it done.